all agree tonight, all of the speakers have agreed that America has a very serious problem. Not only does America have a very serious problem, but our people have a very serious problem. America's problem is
as I've learned tonight, Party Phil has no problem with walking in halfway through a conversation and pouring his heart out.
I like how every episode of the Hallcast begins in mid-sentence. It's very... By everyone, I
should
mean...
Should we keep that?
I mean two so far.
But should we keep that tradition?
I don't know if we should keep everything. I don't know... It should always be whatever.
I love things like that, though. Intricacy, like just like those little fucking... Maybe they'll never even notice, even though we're talking about it.
The listeners don't care. They know that when they come here and they settle in for the Hallcast and they relax themselves.
So you and I, we've been friends casually for like about a year.
Interrupted me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Damn you. I, you know, if we were on television instead of on the radio, I might smack you.
You know what? I think what it means, first of all, this is going to sound so weak, but my left ear is dead to the world.
Yeah.
I got allergies, but all I have to do is pull the whole card, zip it, white boy, and then we'd be quiet.
No, that's not necessary. I save my racial slurs for special occasions when they really matter. I'm a firm, you know, a good racial slur is designed to make a guy swing on you. So you can do whatever the fuck you want in self-defense.
Hold on. Okay.
Hold on, everyone. Let's just jump in and get it started. We've already made the listeners indulge a couple minutes of bullshit right now. So we're going to reset for the benefit of everybody. This is the Hallcast. My name is Sheldon Hall. This is the second session that we are doing in the same night. The first two are coming right back to back. Mr. Cody Barksdale, the doc terror of our thing here, he has departed. He is off to do whatever deacons do on Saturday night. And now it leaves the three of us, myself, Sheldon Hull, Mr. Willis Leroy, and Mr.
Party Phil.
Do you prefer to be Party Phil? You're welcome.
You know me. You know what my name is. You know what my moniker is.
Yes. Is there a difference? Are they aspects of the same, or are they something different? You see.
Well, they could be whatever the context wants it to be.
Because
just to let people know who I am, my name is Philip Casey Cardona.
What's your address?
Northeast Florida. Philip Casey Cardona, and my address is Northeast Florida. And people...
Philip lives in the dreams of several very interesting girls.
And so it's a DJ Party Phil or Party Phil or whatever the case may be, but yes.
But you know, as a journalist, in my line of work, I write a lot about musicians and things like that.
Yeah.
And I always come in, it's something I always have to be mindful of. Say, when you write about someone who has a stage name or has an alias that they use, some people, now, the natural tendency is to be complete, you know, is to say, to use their real name, to do the, you know, to... So-and-so was born, this and that, blah, it fits into the narrative, the name's a reflection of the soul. Some people don't mind. Some people are really adamant about not having their real name used, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I've been quoted in things where people, like I have a friend who does some fictional work, and like I guess I come up in some of the things he works on, like, or characters based on me, he's like, should I change the name, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, I did it, you know. I don't do anything. Now don't tell Congress about it, but
it's one of the many ways you can split the population into the people that are shy about what they've done, or you know what, use my damn name. I don't care. You know what I mean?
Well, some people want to protect their identity.
Absolutely, many people do,
and that's okay. That's fine.
I don't care at all.
I don't care at all. That's no. Our bond.
I mean, we're all in various aspects of media.
Right.
You know, in our way, we do our things. You know, it's.
It's a decision you make. Are you going to be open?
Yes.
You want censorship?
Yes. Hullcast number 2, taping tonight. What is tonight? October
13th.
October 13th, 2011.
You realize it's Chase's birthday, right?
Chase Ulrich's birthday.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so just to string it together, her yes. last name is Ulrich, and mine is Leroy.
Yes.
You don't believe me that it's Leroy, do you?
I believe whatever you say.
Well, you say Leroy, but it's a capital R. It's
well,
Leroy.
I don't know. I just didn't know. I never heard you pronounce it. That's the first time I...
Well, I'll give you a story.
I'm from the hood, so I always pronounce it Leroy.
Exactly.
That's part of...
That's a sign of respect.
From the north side. Right.
I'm from Northside, Jacksonville. Shout out Myrtle Ave, Kings Road, Flag Street, Moncrief, Avenue B.
You're like
and
this.
MLK.
And you were there. You were there in the 80s.
Where I'm from, it's always about accenting as many syllables as possible. You know, hey Philip, Willis. You know, are you already just want more just so I'm quickly?
I think that's
Gosh.
What it does to you.
Yeah.
I don't think it's like a law of diminishing returns where
no.
you want less as
well,
the night goes on.
That's why I stopped drinking coffee as much as I did. You know, I used to drink a pot a day.
I've been so good. I haven't been smoking cigarettes. So I have to pick up other vices besides cigarettes.
I think one of them is talking shit.
Talking shit, being yes. a jerk.
Obviously, we're not talking about drugs or anything.
No,
like that.
No, no. You know, this guy loves hot tea. He keeps
yeah,
drinking.
I mean, it's like.
Philip, there's yeah. more hot tea in the world. It'll be there tomorrow.
I know,
Get
man.
Get you a Pico, son.
Mm-hmm.
But Sheldon, let me
I
tell
have
you
a
this.
Pico, a trench coat, Pico. Anyways, let's move on.
Let's move on.
Yeah. Let's move on. Well, all right, let's go straight
let's
to.
Move on.
Let's talk about the Zuccotti Park thing.
Straight.
I'm going to go take a little tinkle in a moment, but I want to get this thing started to talk about Zuccotti Park, which is the park in New York City where the Occupy Wall Street movement. Hold on. Let me set it up for the people. It really got started. And it's been continuing on and so forth. 7 a.m. this morning, or right now it is Thursday night, the 13th, Friday morning, the 14th, 7 a.m., all the protesters and occupiers have to vacate Zuccotti Park, according to Mayor Bloomberg and NYPD Commissioner Ray
right.
Kelly, in order to allow the park to be cleaned. Number one, they should be cleaning the park anyway,
exactly.
which I think in some cases people have tried to do. If they fail to clean it to leave that pretense open for the authorities to step in, that's a strategic mistake that subsequent Occupy movements around the country should try to avoid. I'm a firm believer in do not. All those laws, I mean, this is a metaphor for life. These laws are just out there. They're booby traps for people.
Right.
To
yeah.
stop people en route. So I'm like, you know, it's not about proving the point. It's about victory. It's about winning, whatever it is you're trying to do. It's like, don't give these guys an excuse to, like, jack your shit up.
Exactly.
But, you know, the park thing's happening. They're saying you have to go. And then when you come back in, they have all these rules for the ones that come back in after the park is clean, however long that takes. You know, maybe they'll say, oh, well, we were inspecting the park while we were cleaning, and they decided, you know, it's not up to code, so we need to spend 6 months to repave it or do
right.
this or that. But either way, when the protesters come back in, according to reports I've heard, they will not have to... I mean, they will have to, how do I put it? They can't bring coolers, tents, sleeping bags, things like that back into the park. They'll have to stand up, things like that. And they just got a new permit, apparently, to be out there in New York for another 4 months. You know, and now, of course, it's spread in other parts of New York. They're doing little things like moving out to, like, Times Square and like Central Park,
right.
blah, blah, which are more public spaces. But the thing that troubles me, there's a good bunch of people out there in Zuccotti Park tonight who have resolved that they will not leave. They'll have to be carried out. you know, and others will, you know, possibly resist. And I think it opens the possibility for real violence.
Yeah, definitely. Tomorrow.
And I hope it's not. I would always say, you know, I always say to protesters, you know, I mean, for something like that, if it comes down to, oh, it's all good. That's a screensaver. Yes, if it comes down to like that, just stop, just leave. Walk away. Nothing's worth an arrest. Well, nothing's worth the expense of an arrest. Putting those people across the Brooklyn Bridge and getting 700 people arrested, those are 700 people that could have been contributing in active strategic ways to the movement. Now, there's certainly always a case to be made for getting a few people arrested on purpose to gain publicity and to get into the jails and whatnot to motivate other people.
Yeah, it's like a give and take.
But by and large, I believe, you know, direct provocations like that. Number one, if we're especially in this situation when we're talking about essentially our government wasting shitloads of money on needless misallocation of police resources, we shouldn't be, they shouldn't be doing things that give you that just make force the authorities to jump in there, you know.
In the most part, because it's peaceful protest, isn't it? Though no?
It's mostly peaceful protest. There's always assholes in every situation.
True, true. You know? Even at a Morrissey concert.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Even at the Morrissey concert.
Skinheads go to Morrissey concerts.
Exactly.
You know? Like emo skinheads and things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, people get into fights at... People used to get into fights at classical music.
Well, you know, I mean, this has been...
I'm saying violence.
Well, let's minimize violence, but... I would just like to make the interjection or the conjecture that, I mean...
Now, if you want to do what people like Party Phil and myself are doing, where, you know, clearly...
Political Action Committee.
Well, we go out and... Yeah, I've been thinking about starting Political Action Committee. I've been working on trying to, like, brainstorm, trying to think of, like, good names for a Political Action Committee, because I want it to be something cool, something that has, like, good... a good acronym to it, but that is also defined vaguely enough that the political opposition cannot pigeonhole.
I think the important thing is that we would like other people to be as involved as we are and try to make sense.
Contact us.
And there's a lot of time, you know, to think about. And we all have jobs and things to do, but it's important to have dialogue and have a moments to be together and
opinions expressed on the Hullcast are not necessarily those of Sheldon Hull, including and especially those expressed by Sheldon Hull. Proceed.
Or Party Phil.
Especially Party Phil. Especially
Party Phil is the wavy gravy of his day, huh?
Right.
Yeah.
So I think it's important that we all, you know, at least try to attempt. I mean, I was there Saturday.
Yes.
And I will be there again Saturday. By Saturday, I mean Occupy Jacksonville. And HLN, corporate news-run media, talked about Occupy New York, and it only really mentioned L.A., Phoenix, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Miami, New York, Washington, where there were riots, and Boston and Atlanta. And you know, they're just... They're trying to get us out of there. They don't want us there. They're trying to remove all the outsiders, but let's get the insiders more active in the.
Well, let me ask you this.
It's a people's assembly.
You have to.
Let me ask you this, Phil.
Sure.
Brother.
Brother.
Woo!
Brother Phil.
Yes.
I was born a Catholic, so it's okay.
But let me ask you this, since you're clearly one of those people. As you know, they always say that the people doing these protests are just like these dumb kids who don't know anything. Clearly, you're very well versed on these issues, and you have been for quite some time, and you're very passionate about what's going on. In your opinion, and this is something I've always, thank you for pouring whiskey on my hand, Willis. You know, it's not the Sad to say, it's not the first time I've had to lick whiskey off my own knuckles.
That's the Skinner handshake.
Yes, yes, exactly. But anyway.
Well, this is the gracious host.
What I want to know is, like, in your opinion, where should it go? Like, the Occupy, like, and I'm speaking particularly of Jacksonville now.
Okay.
Of Occupy Jacksonville, the people involved in it, the people associated with it. It's existing as its own thing right now.
Correct.
But looking forward, like, a year from now, like, where, you know, and in the time in between.
Right.
How do those activists out there translate the energy and the passion and the publicity that's being generated right now and make that translate into serious political advancement?
I think
like the thing, we know what we are, they know what they're opposed to.
Right.
You know.
Not everybody, but
Education obviously is step one, and that's just something all of us, no matter how educated we are, we can always stand to learn more. We can always stand to know more. Always stand to know more people. My favorite thing about all these situations and the way they're connecting is the connectivity. I look at something like Occupy Jax as primarily, first and foremost, a networking opportunity by which the future leadership of this region is being brought together. And this is an ongoing process. These are, a lot of them were people involved in old anti-war protests. Some
yes.
were involved
let me
agitating for Obama, things like that. And we get a lot of kids that know that something's up, and they know that things aren't right. They're not satisfied, but they don't know why. They don't know the details. And we can't. It's important not to stigmatize people just because they don't know what's up. It's always a process. This is some dirty, shady, complicated shit.
Let me just get into my.
And often the people who know the most are the ones that don't think they know anything at all.
Let me just get into a few points that I need to make. Is that overall, I see Occupy.
I hope you're making toast points with some cheese.
I'm so fucking hungry.
Go ahead.
Anyways, though, I think Occupy Jacksonville. I would say, everybody involved who was initially there on Saturday. I think it was a great time for public discourse and for everybody to talk and communicate and create a dialogue with one another. And over time, within the weeks, and maybe perhaps even from a day-to-day basis, everybody within Occupy Jacksonville will contribute their own ideas and the grievances that most Americans have, which is a limitation of corporate America removed from society, a more direct democracy, other things that we can all relate on. You know, we're unemployed, we don't have money, people don't have any money to eat, And what we think is that
what we think
is a lot of Americans
don't eat the money, use the money to buy other foods.
It's not a Republican or a Democratic issue anymore. It never was.
What specifically was your expectation after Occupy Jacksonville? What were we supposed to be left with?
I went to Occupy Jacksonville as a beginner, and I left as a person that was ready to do what I had intended on doing, which was I was depressed, I had a lot of anxiety, and I wanted to.
Would you say your political consciousness and the methodology associated with it evolved through that experience?
It evolved. I was awakened. It's not about me, but it's not a. It's not.
Yes, it is about you. It's about all of us.
It's about me, and it's about every day, and it's about all the time, and it's about
24 hours.
Collective action does not work unless the individuals involved in that collective action are conscious of themselves and their own needs as individuals. It doesn't mean that you have to have an ego. It means that you have to be knowledgeable about yourself. It means you have to know your body. It means you have to know what you're good at and know what you're not good at. Sometimes you got to have enough ego to say, you know, I'm better at this than anybody else is. Sometimes you got to have enough humility to say, you know, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. Can somebody help
right.
me?
And it goes
hand in hand.
How did you end up being, Shelton, how did you end up being a speaker at this event?
I ended up being a speaker.
Shelton wrote his name, and after that,
I went
wrote
there.
My name.
The people who run it, the individuals who run it, and because I've not actually asked them this question, I will not mention their name, but their names. But
fair enough.
I know the names of the people who took like the as we all do
the lead role.
The,
yeah.
You know, and they're very nice people.
No,
nice.
But I mean,
we're doing this general
assembly.
Do you
consider yourself a keynote speaker?
No, there was no keynote. It was just. We went in the order that we signed up in. They said, anyone who wants to speak, you're welcome to speak. And they went around with this little board, this little piece of paper.
Okay.
And everyone signed up. And I think I was like number like 17 or something like that.
Yeah.
Who was number one?
I have no idea.
I think I was right after Shelton. And Shelton's speech was encouragement for my speech.
Yeah.
But... the reality is that we need to.
Like I knew.
We need to come to. Every, I'm just going to make this point very quickly. After what's said, it's said, and you know, we've reached a point.
This is the whole cast, by the way.
It's the whole cast, and I should say that.
And yeah, let me interject. Like I came in knowing that if I had an opportunity to speak, I would speak. I knew that in advance, but it was totally egalitarian.
Exactly.
Yes.
Absolutely. Right. I agree 100%.
And it was a lot of like randomly. Interesting things that occurred, like cats with different type. There's a whole wide range, like all different age groups, different races, different sexes, different political orientations.
We need,
yeah.
But the
now
the
proceed. I'm sorry.
The movement needs to become a little bit more disciplined and more conscious of the political orientation that we all encompass, which is essentially.
Discipline comes through
populist
ego.
Populist party, and
discipline comes through ego.
I'll be honest with you, Party Phil. If you got up on stage and started talking like you are now, I can't imagine you like fucking invigorating a population.
It's hard for me because it's like what? I mean, I can invigorate myself, but it's like, could I really talk about an entire like? Encompassment of political.
But don't you realize
ideology.
Once everyone in the world who signs up to speak gets to speak, it gets watered down. People should be invited. You should have been excluded.
No, no. Don't even joke about that because a lot of the best.
Oh, it's not a joke.
With things like that, it's like open mic nights. Like a lot of the best stuff you get.
That
comes,
is no.
No, hold on. A lot of the
it
best stuff you get
night.
Comes from people that don't, that you wouldn't expect. To come up there. Like, there are people who would have never approached someone and said, hey, I want to go and speak at this thing. You know, like, I would have said, if I knew, as soon as I'm a reporter, whoever I know who's running the thing, blah, 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 I'm going to go up there and, like, yeah, if you want me to talk, I'll talk, because that's what I do. But a lot of the people that spoke at the Occupy Jacks, for example, especially the older people, they would have never just gone up and said, hey, let me speak. They would not have done it except that someone approached them and said, hey, would you like to speak? And they're like, oh, do you think my story is something you kids would want to hear? And they're like, yeah, sure. You know, you get like some veterans, you get people from other countries, you get.
That's what I liked
when
about
we came
the whole
into the thing. When they came into the Hemming Plaza to start things out, there were already like, you know, 20, 30 homeless people or whatever hanging out in the park at that time, and a lot of them stayed as that evolved, and they were coming in, they're picking up literature, they're making friends.
Yeah, but here's my point is that, like, Shelton, even though, you know, I don't totally agree with your politics because I don't understand
good.
Them because you're such a fucking weirdo.
Yes.
But the thing is, Party Phil gets on the mic,
yep.
I'm like, that's Party Phil. I do not – Party Phil loves to hear Party Phil.
Well, Party Phil.
I'm not listening to that. I'm walking away at that point. Open up the mic and let every person in Jacksonville speak.
That was not
guess what? By the end.
That was not Party Phil. Now, even though he's billed as such, that was not Party Phil at Hemming Plaza. last Saturday. That was Philip Casey Cardona. You know,
regardless, tonight,
the limelight,
even though he was
in front of the Ustream,
even though he was 40%
in front of the Ustream.tv, you know, putting himself out there, which we can all look at right now to get live streaming video from Occupy America events. And I created the hashtag Occupy America on Twitter. You know, you can jump on the on that. Occupy Jax is on Twitter. Occupy Wall Street is on Twitter. They're both hashtag and they trend. So those are all ways that you can support. There's people say that these things are not articulated. They say that they're hold on. They say that they're it's not articulated. They say that they're not representing anything. I think that's bullshit. I think now I will concede that the situation is vastly more complicated than almost any of us think of, but it's thoroughly documented. Like if you jump on there now, like if you jump on the Twitter, for example, and you just put in the hashtag Occupy Wall Street or hashtag Occupy Jacksonville and just follow everything that follows along behind it, you're going to pick up a lot of useful links. You're going to pick up a lot of things like that.
Well, the sad thing is that in New York and Boston, the Northeast weather is going to start, you know, occurring within the next few weeks or so. And people really realistically can't be out there in the dead of winter because they would become sick and they would become disoriented within, you know.
That's right. When wintertime comes, a lot of the old folks are going to drop off.
Are you really taking a break, Sean?
This break is sponsored by the Rockefeller crew.
That party's good.
What?
As soon as I separate these guys, we will resume the broadcast.
Why would I be angry with you?
Because I was challenging you.
That's not something that really angers me. People should challenge me. I should be able to
be
critically.
If you motherfuckers are gonna walk around while conducting, like, you know, discussions in the middle of the goddamn Hallcast. If there's anyone out there in the viewing audience that wants to like give us some free headset microphones,
I have some microphones.
You know, we just need to get like Bobby Brown, My Prerogative style on it, because people are walking around and they're just not.
You know what I mean? I want to be all like one way. And Cody's Republican, but he wouldn't really battle you off because I think it's outnumbered. But
just put the mic by your mouth, please.
Fine.
The audience can't hear this. They think that we.
We're
insane. They think that we're just all out of sorts, especially me, because it's the Hull cast, and Hull is just all over the place, because we're blah 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 blah.
Because we're on.
That's not how we roll. We're on serious business. This is about America. This is about Earth and all the intergalactic particles circulating throughout the universe.
But on top of that, it's also about the inception of the Shelton Hull podcast. You know what I want to do? You're not going to like this.
Motherfucker's been interrupting me for 15 years, which is why the country is in the condition that it's in. I warned you about the war. I warned you about the housing market. I warned you about the bailout.
Maybe your pauses are too long.
I warned you about NAFTA and GATT. Not just me, but many other people.
Tell these women what I'm going to do to them.
Has anybody ever compared you to Huey Newton? But you're way more charismatic than Huey. Huey Newton is so slow at talking.
And a black guy shot Huey Newton too.
Oh yeah.
What was
Walt
the drug,
was going to
was
kill
there
you?
A drug deal gone wrong?
Apparently Huey Newton was buying blow. He was either using.
I don't
he was
believe.
Like
I don't like. Yeah, I don't believe it.
I don't
he
think
he was introduced to it by the CIA, and they
I
got
don't, you know
it was
I'm,
entrapment like the whole time, man. They just wanted to kill him. They
don't
want him alive. It's
you
over.
Know, I'm sure Huey was was probably dabbling in that shit because a lot of political people do. I don't see that Huey would be doing, would be going hand to hand on felony.
And, for the record, we don't do that here.
No.
On the whole cast, we don't do that shit.
I don't know. I don't even know what any of us are talking about right now.
I wouldn't even know where to find it, to be honest with you.
No.
Likewise.
And if Willis doesn't know where to find it, then it probably doesn't even exist at all.
Then he would still be married. No. Hey.
Stop that.
All right.
You know.
Anyways.
Shout out to the entire Mid-Atlantic territory, by the way. Yeah, but basically, the thing with the Huey Newton thing is, the story is told, and it's hard to get for sure, to get the truth of it, because, you know, there was only two people that were there, Huey and the guy that shot him. The guy that shot him for some reason, you know. There's no reason he would take the charge for anybody else, you know. But I don't think that he would... I could see the guy being involved in, like, doing a bunch of blow. He was down there in Oakland, you know, over in... Or I think it was Oakland.
I think it was L.A. where it actually happened.
And this was late 80s, so this is when the whole crack, you know. I could totally see Huey Newton being one of those guys that was talking shit to some, like, gang, telling them, oh, you can't do this, deal this stuff. Because the Panthers were never about that. The Panthers... I mean, they drank a little bit, and they did, you know. They smoked
a lot of weed.
Yeah.
And
but they weren't down for any of the. They would not have been down with crack.
No,
and,
cocaine.
It's
not part of the psyche, the consciousness
of the.
And
Huey Newton was doing a bunch of stuff, you know. I don't see Huey Newton going in on some hand to hand on some felony weight deal, with some small time hustler, that ended up shooting him because no. If not to say it wasn't a grimy business, but simply for the fact that if you're Huey Newton, you're probably already being watched, so why take that risk? That'd be like John Gotti buying an 8-ball off somebody.
Yeah.
You know? That shit doesn't happen. You know? Except for the time that David Lee Roth got busted buying a dime bag of perp in Central Park. That was like 98 or something.
Yeah, they crippled
the
industry.
And he's David Lee Roth. Like, why would David Lee Roth ever pay for...
Quick quote. My mom saw Van Halen at a house party.
You come to Jacksonville, David Lee Roth. You can smoke
LA.
All you want in Jacksonville.
True story.
She saw him in his prime.
She went to a show.
No one in the Van Halen crew pays for shit in Duval. On general principle.
No shit, but you have to see the correlation between Van Halen and professional wrestling. He basically was wearing a onesie.
Shelton will write the correlation event of wrestling to anything anyways.
Well, wrestling is a big thing. And I'll explain for the listeners, those who don't know me, why the wrestling thing always comes up in my writing and whatnot. Writers always have their metaphors that they like to use. Mailer had boxing. Hemingway had boxing and bullfighting. Many, many writers and politicians use football as a metaphor. And metaphors are important, you know. Metaphors, similes, means of comparison. It's how we take the vast, complicated lives we live in and explain them and depict them in ways that are
Agreed.
Accessible to each other, you know.
Like, definitely.
You know, this happens all the time. Like the concept of, even if you're not a football fan, for example, the concept of the Hail Mary pass is pretty much understood.
Yes.
The idea of the concept of a chop block. Like the phrase, the word cock block evolves from chop block. And it's meant to, it's meant to have a similar dastardly undertone. Others have different metaphors. Hunter Thompson was big into football.
But let me ask you this, though.
For me, I grew up here in Jacksonville, Florida, you know, and when I was growing up in the 80s in Jacksonville, there was a lot of wrestling on the air. You could watch. Now, here in Jacksonville, the main thing was Championship Wrestling from Florida, run by Eddie Graham out of Tampa. One of the major territories. And, you know, in the 70s and 80s, like between Florida and Georgia were pretty much interchangeable. Solely worked for both of them. He did the commentary for both shows. So he'd be in Tampa half the week, Atlanta the other half of the week. All the big names worked Florida. Everybody came through, you know. And so for me growing up in the 80s in Florida, I'd see that. Now, I can't remember what day the Wheat Championship Wrestling from Florida aired. I think maybe Sunday.
I thought it was Saturday. I remember waking up Saturdays and hearing Gordon Soley's voice.
But we were extra lucky here in Florida, which I think was a function of the Navy crowd and the territory and the fact that our local stations like WJXT and stuff had, and other stations had really expansive broadcast signals, and we got Duval got cable right at the very beginning. Like all,
we're definitely a major hub on the circuit. Definitely.
It's like, if any of the 20 chicks that were in any of the Emmanuel films walked into Birdie's, like they would not pay for a drink, just on general principle. And I was a wrestling fan, and wrestling's not the only thing I love. For me, I loved all sports in the 80s. Like I loved football in the 80s. I loved Major League Baseball in the 80s. NBA, because everything was awesome. I would love to SEC football, but as a wrestling fan, hold on. There was Championship Wrestling from Florida was airing weekly. The WWF show, their syndicated show, was airing weekly. You could also get on ESPN at different times. World Class Championship Wrestling out of Amarillo, Texas, which had all the Von Erichs and Kamala and stuff like that. You could also get the AWA coming into ESPN out of Minnesota, which had Vern Gagne, early Road Warriors, Kurt.
Well, let me ask you this, though. Let me ask you this real quick.
Yeah.
Because we had so many of
the... But what brought me to the business and kept me to the business, and you can... I'll just wrap up, and you can follow in Dusty versus Flair. The Ric Flair-Dusty Rhodes rivalry, to me, is the most, like... I mean, not to get super geeky about it, but it's like... That's right up there with, like, the Luke Skywalker, Darth Vader.
No, I'm with you. And that was exactly what I was going to ask. It was so weird.
Shout out to Flair and Dusty.
We had Dusty. We had Flair. We had Billy Jack. We had all these huge guys.
Superstar Billy Graham.
Exactly. Why was it this part of the country that had so many of the people? Even after was it the WF or the WWF?
WWF.
But even then, Dusty Rhodes kind of sold out and had some weird bumblebee theme with.
Hey, yeah, he was wearing the polka dots.
But he was still on the national scene. He still made it, even though he was like, what, 53?
Oh, yeah, something like that. Dusty, Dusty was old by the time we even knew who he was. Like when he was doing all that stuff with Flair. I mean, Flair was 35, Like, Flair was born in 49. I think Dusty was born in, like, 43 or 44, something like that.
By the time he made it on the national world, his head was so scarred up with those self-inflicted things, man. Oh, yeah.
Well, that was the old Southern style. They were shit kickers, you know? Florida, when Dusty was booking, they used to keep, like, sunglasses backstage. I think they did in a lot of places just because the wrestlers would come in. That's why when you look at those old clips, they're all wearing like sick Ray-Bans, even though it's 10 o'clock.
When they're doing their trash talking,
Well, they probably...
You yellow belly.
They were all out till probably 2 or 3 in the morning the night before, did a bunch of driving.
But the thing is, like, even like Tony Atlas...
Yeah.
And was it Rocky Armstrong? What was his name?
Rocky Johnson.
Rocky Johnson used to fight with Dusty.
You know who Rocky Johnson's son is?
No.
The Rock.
Really?
Yeah.
Rocky Johnson had the mustache.
Rocky Johnson, Rocky Johnson married Leah Maivia, who is the daughter of the High Chief Peter Maivia, one of the original like stars of the old WWF in the Eddie Rogers days. And the Maivia family ran the basically the Hawaii territory.
Right.
You know,
right.
And then you had the Afi family, like the Maivias, they were all Samoan. Like basically all the islands, Hawaii and Samoans and whatnot. Yeah, and their son was The Rock.
Those dudes, him and Tony Atlas were ripped, like 2% body
nice
fat, man.
I
went to a couple of the live ones, the Coliseum. Jacksonville Coliseum was definitely a major tour stop.
Absolutely.
Even though today, like, bands hate Jacksonville.
Well, bands hate Jacksonville because Jacksonville runs its city on some bullshit. I always say Jacksonville's like a pretty girl that doesn't know she's pretty.
Right.
And just well, sells like, herself okay, out like, for like shitty analogy. Ass dudes that's over and metaphor. Over again. Fact is, up until not even, it's barely about 10 years ago, many of the top bands in the country historically came through Jacksonville. Going back to the days of Duke Ellington, Count Basie, Cab Calloway. The reason Jacksonville does not draw more national bands, touring bands and such, is that we do not effectively promote our own musicians. Like all the good, all the great accomplishments that the musicians in Jacksonville have accomplished in the last like five years or so in the post-Clear Channel era is really on their own initiative and their own hard work. Like the media didn't put as much into it as they did. And I speak as a member of the media. You know, I've written a lot about local musicians and stuff, and I regret that I'm not able to write more. I regret that I'm not able to really just write every single story I want to. There are guys that do great shit, and I haven't been able to write. I haven't had a chance to write anything about them for years.
Well, there's
because there's no outlet for it. But they still do it anyway, thanks to social media. If the politicians and the television stations and the radio stations really jumped in and seized on the talent and the quality of talent that we have here right now, that would the few thousands of dollars they would channel into those kinds of ventures and a little bit of like airtime they could put into it could potentially generate millions of dollars of revenue quickly. And I'm talking about real jobs, real positive change. If WJCT wanted to take one of their like half a dozen digital radio stations or digital TV stations and set aside entirely for local stuff, let local bands come in their studio and perform, let people do stuff like this. I'm not saying any of these people should put me on the air. I understand why they don't necessarily want to use me because I'm hardcore. You know, when you bring me in, you're getting Sheldon Hall and you're getting all the stuff that I'm dealing with. But there are people out there, these bands, these like nice, sweet, sweet young people, they're pretty cool and mellow and like they're just trying to do their thing. They're just trying to like sing some songs about being in love and make a couple hundred bucks here and there, you know, and pay their rent and like just proceed along. You know, they're the ones that are out there doing these protests.
As a member, I want to chime in very quickly as a member of the music community and say that music is it's not really something that's a career for a lot of people because it's not it's not something that you make a lot of money doing, but like
it should be.
Well, like music is a powerful endeavor, and I like it as more than most things that I like.
It's like
I love to play music all the time, and I want to be playing music, and I love it.
See, I'm not a musician myself, you know. I played around on little, I play a little drums. You know, we've done the Tough Titty, myself and Chris Buck, the great Tough Titty Intermittent. We've had this band, Tough Titty, for like 5 years,
okay.
And we played 3 gigs, all of which were spectacular, but whatever. But I'm not a musician. I'm a consumer of music. I listen to music. I know for me as a fan, as someone who likes stuff like the musicians who really made an impact on my life, that do something to me, like the ones that I listen to, even the new musicians I get turned on to this year, you know, when I like that shit, like I like it. Like it, I feel strongly about that as I feel about some of the politics, you know. You know, bands like, you know, well, we could even go through a whole list, but we'll save that for a later time when we're able to really play the songs for you, the listener, and see what's coming up there. But what I'm saying is I couldn't put in words, I couldn't put in dollars the impact that someone like Jimmy Page had on my life, you know? It's like, I mean, if I saw, I'm not the, you know, I always give respect to like cool people when I meet them. When I meet celebrities, it's like, it's always great. I've had the opportunity to meet some of my heroes, you know, like Noam Chomsky, Cornel West, like Kim Deal from The Breeders and Henry Rollins and people like that, you know, and it's always awesome. You know, if I met somebody like, say, if I just like was face to face with Ric Flair right now, I'd probably burst into tears like a little girl. And I'm not ashamed to say it, you know, because, you know, when to whatever extent that I've ever made an impact on anyone's life in the world, they should say thanks to Ric Flair, because Ric Flair is the guy. I mean, I had a lot of great role models within my own family and whatnot, peers, but Ric Flair was one of the first guys. Him, Johnny Carson, all those old comedians, you know, like he was one of the first guys that really spoke to me as a young poor kid growing up in the hood to say that you can come from anywhere, you can do whatever the fuck you want to do in life, and as long as you're willing to put in the work to be good at it, then you will be, you know, you'll be all right.
Man, I think that's, you can sum it up. But we're at 4 minutes. I think we're going to edit it.
I'm opposed to editing. The more we edit shit, the more we all have to train ourselves to, hold on, we have to train ourselves to do it right the first time.
Can I edit
and
myself
not rely
being a sellout? And
Just edit it right. Just edit it right now.
Why? Why?
I'm not going to touch it until he says.
What format, what structure are we, like, holding to?
Well, we have some audio experience with, We think about it.
How much hull casting experience do you have? I don't care what machines and what little toys you've worked with. What is your experience with hull casting? What is your experience with putting this lightning in a bottle, brother? What is your experience with walking the fine edge? We're hull casting. And you see, listeners, this is getting down to the real reality, the real gritty reality of, like, I shouldn't have to say these things more than once.
Yeah, you don't have to. You can continue, because no one will.
Alright. This is Hullcast number 2. These niggas is tripping. And they ain't even niggas, so I don't know why they's tripping. Shout out to Jack Tripper. Shout out to Chrissy Snow. Shout out to the whole Three's Company crew.
Kerry Rogers.
Shout out to Kerry Rogers, as always.
Shout out to Jack the Ripper.
Fuck Jack the Ripper. We're going to wrap up this Hullcast number 2 because these guys are having so much fun that they're not able to hold it together. Don't touch the mouse. Don't touch the mouse. You're just so enjoying
lost the shit.
Like,
it's over.
You're just like, you're licking each other like toads, like horny toads in a fucking Roman bathhouse, and you're getting high off your bodily secretions. And I don't even have a webcam, and it's a bad thing.
Well,
so we're going to wrap up Hullcast number 2. We're going to turn this thing off. We're not going to edit a goddamn thing. And then maybe we'll start up Hullcast number 3 in 5 minutes. Maybe we won't. Maybe we'll start it up in 5 days. Maybe we won't. Who are you, Party Phil, to tell me or him when to turn what off? This is the Hullcast. I'm Sheldon Hall. I know exactly what I'm doing. I know exactly what I'm doing. I wake the ladies up at night and I put the men to sleep. If you will be, you know, click the fucking button. Stop it now. You want to stop it so much, stop it now. There you go.
Job to build and collect ourselves with intellect, to revolve, to evolve the self-respect, cause we got to keep ourselves in check, or else it's